From KCRW, this is Left, Right, and Center.
On January 20th, 2017, Donald Trump was sworn in as President of the United States. And for the past 2 years, official Washington has been in turmoil.
Will the new chief executive get along?
The protests began before he took the oath of office.
But how are you doing? I'm Josh Barrow, host of KCRW's Left, Right, and Center. Today, we're bringing you an extra program with something different. A look at how our extraordinary political climate is affecting ordinary Americans. Instead of a panel discussion, in this special documentary, you'll meet six people with different views, living in different places, and with different stakes in politics.
I voted for Donald Trump.
I voted for Hillary Clinton.
I don't think I'm going to be interested at all anymore in any politics.
Since President Trump's election, they've been recording their lives and reflecting on how our national politics affects them.
My ultimate goal is for me to get a green card.
On a day like today, politics do not matter whatsoever.
We knew it was going to be really bad, but even then I was sort of horrified at how bad it got, how quickly.
You've heard from President Trump, you've heard from Mitch McConnell, and you'll be hearing a lot more from Nancy Pelosi. Today, take a listen to voices that come from outside the halls of government, from the cities and small towns where the rest of us live. It's an American story that's not in the news and not written in the history books. This is Left, Right, and Center presents 2 Years, Diaries of a Divided Nation.
In Texas, it's typically not polite to talk politics with people. So I tend to not, why would you talk about something divisive? You know, like why even try to, you know, to engage someone on that level if you don't have to?
To say I'm American just makes me kind of straighten up a bit and really feel proud. I mean, I think I've been blessed. I'm the best place to live in the world. Until now.
People would say, well, if you don't like it, why are you here? Like, why are you here? Just move, go back. And even though this country is pretty shitty, to people like me, it's just like, well, this is all I know.
I think that I live in an amazing country. There's a lot of opportunities here. And I think that this could be a blip in history and not the final destination.
I guess I have to be careful how I say this so as not to sound like some crazy religious freak, because I'm not. But at the same time, I have felt that this country has been going down a moral landslide. In other words, this nation needs to get back to God.
In religious traditions or in biblical tradition, there's this either total salvation or total destruction. It's one or the other. We don't talk about how do you get through wastelands and ruins. We're not in a physical wasteland necessarily, but we are going through like this period of like basically the ruins. You're walking through destruction. And the only way you can get through is together. And not in a very fake, you know, kumbaya sort of way, but really, you know, lifting each other up.
My name is Angel Uribe. I live in Houston, Texas. I am a part-time teacher, and I also minister at the church, assisting the pastor, and I'm a Hispanic young man of 44 years of age.
On the News Hour tonight, Americans decide. Voters head to the polls to choose between the first woman president and a businessman running for his first elected office.
Okay, so election day, November 8th. Okay. Oh, man, it was rough for me because I honestly did not plan on voting for Donald Trump. I originally put Hillary. But I got to tell you, at the end, just before hitting the send button in one of those polling booths, I was like, wait a minute. I don't know. And then I remembered, you know, I'm not for abortion. I'm not for all these other things. I'm not a liberal. I went all the way back to the first page in the voting booth, and I just said, all right, Lord, here goes. Holy Spirit, please guide me on this one. I need to know what to do. Just something in my heart, in my mind was like, okay, I just hit Donald Trump, and then I sent away my vote.
Outside of the city here, she'll be watching those results. Just
Hey, my name is Adam, and I'm from San Antonio, Texas, and I voted for Donald Trump.
Well, Jake, the Clinton campaign is increasingly confident of reaching 270 electoral votes.
I was here at the House, and my fiance was camped out upstairs. I was downstairs. Things were not looking good for Trump, and she was like on cloud nine. She was dancing around. My neighbor was having an election party. I was like, okay, well, I'm going to go over here and, you know, go to this party. And she was like, yeah, get out. You know, it's like, she's like, get the hell out of here. I go over there and, you know, things are starting to turn. Basically, by the time that I came back over to the house, things did not look good for Hillary Clinton.
This means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president.
My fiance was a mixture of unresponsive and hellfire. She was deeply emotionally hurt and, you know, couldn't believe that that much of the nation consisted of a-holes. And, you know, and I was one of them. Yeah, it was like unforgivable. I slept in a different room because, you know, she would go between like not talking to like our relationship is over and get the hell out. That went on for weeks. It was not something that just went away. I didn't even feel all that great voting for Trump in the first place because I thought that he was a plant to just totally disrupt the Republican Party, which is what he did, but I kind of liked it anyway. I just felt like maybe it was time for some disruptive leadership.
Outrage over an election.
Waves of anti-Trump marchers roll through hundreds of towns and cities.
My name is Irtifa Binte Farid. I am a Muslim American and a PhD student at the University of Virginia. It's Friday, January 20th, 2017. I am preparing to go up to Washington, D.C. for the Women's March that's going to take place tomorrow. I live in Charlottesville, Virginia, and my family is originally from Bangladesh, and I'm a hijabi woman. In English, we use the term to describe a woman, a Muslim woman who chooses to cover her head, wears a headscarf. The headscarf is called hijab. I was out of the country during the whole election cycle. I sent my absentee ballot for the election. I was in Oman. And, you know, there were a lot of jokes going around about, oh, he doesn't like Muslims, so why are you going back? You should just stay here with us. As time went on, I was like, no, I have to, if he wins, if he makes, somehow becomes the president, I have to go back because he wants to get rid of people like me and I'm not going to make it easier for him. But also because I think I realized while I was gone how American I am, even though I moved here at 12 years old. And I think I realized what stakes I have here. Gosh. And I don't know. It's just, there's a lot to do. And I just hope I have the energy to continue doing it. It just already feels very exhausting.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm fine. Just now when you called, I was busy watching a black bear out in the backyard attacking a bird feeder. I won't dare go out back and go for my walks because I can't. It's one tame. I couldn't run or anything, so I didn't live to be this old to be eaten by a bear. My name is Marjorie Richard. I am a 78-year-old woman, white woman. I live in Mexico, Maine. I love my little town of Mexico. In 2016, I voted for Donald Trump. I wasn't influenced by Russians or anybody. You know, in my mind, I don't want a woman president, period. Over the years of my life, women who I have been under, you know, who have been power over me, have always been, not, I shouldn't say mean, but they've been, yeah, they've been mean. They use their power. When my kids were in school and they had women teachers, and if I was called into the school to have a meeting with one of the teachers, they always tried to make me feel like I was lower than them. Always felt put down by women. So it could have been any woman and I would have voted no.
Day mark of his presidency. Since President Trump took the oath of office 99 days ago,
President Trump now approaching the 100 day mark tonight. Here, the people speak. We were out.
How are you feeling about your man?
Oh, no. Do you want to make me cry? And everything I hoped he was going to do and was going to happen don't seem to be happening. Number one, I thought he was going to be tougher on immigration. Number two, I really thought that he was going to clean the cesspool out or whatever. He seems like everybody's still there, and he isn't building his wall. I keep having pictures of that beautiful wall, and I don't think it's ever going to happen. But we're not going forward.
Reform was Donald Trump's signature promise, and at the center of it, that wall. On day one, he said he would build a big, beautiful wall.
My name is Isabel Castillo. I am a master's student studying conflict transformation at Eastern Mennonite University in Harrisonburg, Virginia. I was born in Mexico, and I came to the United States when I was 6 years old. I really do feel like I am American in every sense of the word, except on paper, you know, because I don't have U.S. citizenship. I am under the DACA program, which stands for Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. Sometimes we call ourselves documented individuals. DACA is a 2-year work permit, and it defers your deportation for 2 years. So we are able to renew this status every 2 years, and you cannot get a green card with this. You cannot become a U.S. citizen.
I'm getting nervous. This is my first U.S. Border Patrol. Yeah.
At the beginning of 2017, I was on my way to Nogales, Arizona, and going through several Border Patrol checkpoints.
Oh my gosh, there's cars, all cars must exit. There's a bunch of cones and flashing lights. And
so it's still within the United States, but you have to go through these checkpoints. It's like a toll station, but these are immigration agents in their uniforms, and there's canine dogs, and there's huge lights.
They're going, ma'am, you're nervous.
I'm nervous.
I was worried because even though I had DACA, I think with the new administration and the threat of DACA being taken away, it's just like, what if they detain me or, you know, don't accept my DACA?
This is Isabel Castillo. If I am detained, please take care of my mom.
Who is not afraid?
They just took a picture of our car, didn't they?
Yeah, they did.
Let me put my phone down. What are you going to say?
Whatever I need to. Hey man, how's it going? Take care.
That's it?
Yeah.
They just waved us through. Holy cow. Mo looks very American, I guess. Yeah. I'm here with my Iranian friend. Last year, also undocumented.
Obama, immigration-related arrests are up nearly 33%, and illegal border crossings are down since the president took office.
I'm not a racist. I see it as a security thing to keep
people out of our country unless they come in legally.
Those who have very opposite views as mine, like, I try to be on their shoes, and it's just like, okay, well,
he's only doing these things to try to keep us secure.
There's just too many people wanting to come to the United States, and
I really think he's looking out for the safety of the, you know, the people, American people.
But then, yeah, there's other instances that I'm like,
you know, but it's my country.
That's just not the right way.
It's my country, and I want it to be safe and secure.
There's just some people you probably won't change their minds, and like, why waste your time trying to change the way that they think? But at the same time, it's just like, no, we should probably have a civil conversation and talk, but it's hard. It's complicated life.
There he is. I can hear him. The man, the myth, the legend. How you doing, brother?
Hey, brother. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Always a pleasure to hear you.
Definitely.
Hi, this is Angel again. I'm a conservative, and I live in Houston, Texas.
Right on.
How's family? How are the babies?
Oh, they're great. They're getting big.
My name is Jarek Bapnew, and I live in San Dimas, California. I'm a Christian. I'm a parent. I'm a teacher. I'm someone who wants to see the world a better place. I am definitely not a Trump supporter.
That's great.
How are your kids? How's everyone?
Same. Everybody's good. They're growing. Seth is more active. Get this. I cannot beat him in basketball anymore, man.
That's going to happen.
I cannot beat
him. I met Derek at the school that I used to teach in California. He teaches science. I teach math.
The first time I met him was at a staff meeting. He quickly became a close friend.
You know, I had to give him the sad news in 2015 that the Lord had called us to move out to work in ministry out here in Houston.
Your family, and you are family. You are my family, so you are my brother.
And you're our family as well.
Thank
hey,
you.
I had a real quick Thank question you. For you.
Yeah.
Our friendship transcends politics. Being an evangelical, I'm used to having different opinions with a lot of other evangelicals. You know, it's not that I would go, what, you disagree with me? You know, if we talk about it or not, usually in my head, I'm like, oh, we probably disagree. This is Derek Bapnew. It is 7:27 a.m., and I am currently driving to work. So I'm thinking about running for office. I don't really consider myself the person who would be a politician. Politicians usually have had, like, a wonderful life. They went to the right schools. A lot of them went to Harvard or Yale or some Ivy League school. They have a perfect head of hair. And much like the character Aaron Burr on Hamilton, they seem to talk less, smile more. I'm not that guy. I would really like to write laws that would benefit people. But then the other part of me is, you know, is this vanity? You know, who am I to run? I'm just some guy.
All right, Adam here, checking in again. It is May 9th, 2017, giving y'all a little update. After the election, it was really disturbing. You know, like, this is the person that I love the most on the planet, and she is telling me, like, I want nothing to do with you. It took a fair amount of faith for me to just power through that. I just had to make sure that I was, like, extra clean. I didn't leave any trace of me having been there anywhere. You know, like, I make something in the kitchen and, like, I leave it spotless. Any little thing that I could do to kind of reinforce, like, hey, I'm here, I love you, and things are going to be okay. So it's 4:17 p.m., I'm going to be getting married in less than 2 hours. On a day like today, politics do not matter whatsoever. All that matters is I'm marrying the woman that I want to spend the rest of my life with.
One of the things that I love most about her is the fact that she looks at the same world that I see, and she sees something totally different. That fascinates me. I know that she will always fascinate me, and I want that in my life.
Wow.
Look awesome.
You may be seated.
All right. I'm going to call this meeting of Charlottesville City Council to order. Let's begin with the Pledge of Allegiance, everyone.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
My name is Irtifa. I am from Charlottesville. I'm sitting in my room.
So the first motion is, therefore, be it resolved that the Council of Charlottesville, or the City of Charlottesville, shall remove the statue of Robert E. Lee from the park currently known as Lee Park.
So I went to a City Council meeting, and that's because I met some people who were talking about the removal of the Robert E. Lee statue.
The motion to relocate the statue.
This is the motion to relocate the statue as amended.
I didn't even know, like, the history of the Civil War as well when I came here. It's, like, really hard not to be like, General Lee, the best general in U.S. history when you grow up in Charlottesville and, like, there's nothing else that you've been exposed to. But I did not like that statue. It's just huge. It's kind of a scary statue.
All right. The motion carries 3-2.
On Saturday, white nationalists rallied around a statue of Confederate General Robert E. Lee that's scheduled for removal. Then last night, counter-protesters gathered for what they called a vigil against hate.
There were 300 or so people who came with children. Like, there were babies there. My friends and I decided we would make a banner. At first, we were just like, we should just have a sheet and throw it over Lee and cover him up. But then that statue is 24 feet tall, and it is really hard to get a sheet up there. We cut little holes and then tied the rope through it, and then we taped tennis balls to the other end of the rope and then just threw it over the horse's head, and then we hoisted it from the back. It said, Black Lives Matter, fuck white supremacy.
The chaos in Charlottesville had been building for months.
A few months after that, the August 12th rally happened. It was the one that got the most attention, and I saw it happen. I saw national media pick up on the level of violence.
White nationalist rally that descended into deadly violence and chaos.
We knew it was going to be really bad, but even then I was sort of horrified at how bad it got, how quickly.
The image is just coming in, a car plowing into a crowd of demonstrators protesting against those white nationalists, a 32-year-old woman killed.
And then when the car attack happened, I think it was just like not even in the realm of my imagination that that could happen. I still haven't looked at any videos from that day.
Explain why the president described this as bigotry on many sides.
This is not a time to talk about both sides.
The president of the United States painted white nationalists and members of the alt-right as victims.
I had only heard what Trump had said, and he said something to the effect of, they're like bad actors on both sides, and not everybody there was a member of the KKK.
The mainstream media, once again, hysterical. Complete meltdown mode today.
When he said that, like, it made sense to me. If there's, like, a rally outside of our neighborhood, people are going to go and, like, watch just to see, like, what's going on. My wife was, like, repulsed by the fact that I thought that. You know, she ended up saying something to the effect of, like, you know, I wish I was married to somebody that I could respect.
I still feel like when people talk about Charlottesville, they talk about this distant other place and a group of people that are separate from everything else. And you separate yourself away and you say, this is not possible. They did it. It has nothing to do with us.
I don't doubt that there are racist people out there. I guarantee you there's racist people out there. I have to believe in the good in people, or I will see the world as a very scary place that, like, needs to be feared. And I understand that, yeah, like, I'm a middle-class white guy, and so I can have the worldview that I have.
We have to live in that space. I walked down 4th Street today because I had to go to the mall to pick up something. 4th Street is where the car ran into Heather, where she died. And, you know, like, I have to walk the lawn to get to my office to go teach. And that's where, like, I have images burned in my head of Nazis carrying torches, walking down there screaming, you know, "You will not replace us. Jews will not replace us."
Women across the country are identifying themselves as victims of sexual harassment or assault in the wake of Hollywood mogul Harvey Weinstein's downfall.
With the hashtag MeToo, the campaign is putting faces and names to people who have been the victims of sexual harassment and assault.
Hey, I wanted to tell you something. Remember you had asked me about people being assaulted? Well, I went to lunch with my girlfriends, and there was 8 of us there, and 6 out of the 8 admitted that they had been sexually assaulted back in the 50s and never said anything, never. Well, it made me feel, I'll tell you, a ton of bricks like fell off my shoulder, because the same person who had assaulted one of these girls had done it to me, and we both said nothing. I used to work at the theater every night, 6 to 9, when I was in high school. And when I get out, I had to walk home, and it would be dark. My home was about a mile away. And when I get up to a place where it was quite wooded, this guy jumped out of the woods, and he had a big rock and his hand, and he told me, "If you scream, I'll bash your head." I don't know if he was going to rape me or kiss me or you know what, but he didn't have no good intentions. I started screaming my head off. I said, "Oh, get off me." He went away. He ran away. Later on that night, one and only policeman in our town came up to my house. He came up that night and he says, "We know who did this, and we're going to just have a good talk with him." And that was it. It scared me enough for my whole life. To this day, I am petrified. You come up behind me and say, like, "Marjorie," or put your hand on my shoulder, and I scream to high heaven. I'm a scaredy cat. You know what, to tell the truth, after I got off the phone with you, I kind of went and had made myself a cup of tea, and I said, "Boy, that felt good to get that gone." And then I started talking with my husband, and we had some good talk.
You know, the president has been caught on tape saying some pretty gross things about harassing women.
Yeah.
Did you think about that at all as you've been kind of going through this stuff in the past week? Did it cross your mind?
Yeah. It doesn't make it. He's no better than the rest. he did it. He shouldn't get away with it.
President Trump, 3 women now pursuing legal action, 1 over a case of alleged harassment, and 2 others over alleged affairs. And in a moment right here, the attorney...
All these woman stories. I know I said before, okay, he did that before he was president. Okay, he's a man, he did that. But, geez, I kind of keep saying, okay. You can turn your head the other way just so many times, but sooner or later you got to face it, What the heck is going on?
Do you think that if the 2020 election were tomorrow, you would vote for Donald Trump again?
No, I wouldn't.
So far, the fate of the some 700,000 in the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, or DACA, remains in limbo. One man detained in February...
Wait, I wanted to show you something.
Yeah?
Are you ready?
I'm ready. Oh my God, Isabel! Wait, is that what I think it is?
Yes. Patrick and I are expecting. We're due in March. So I came back to Harrisonburg from Arizona in the spring of 2017.
How does it feel to be pregnant?
A little nauseous, but not too bad. When I got back, I just went back to work, and my husband and I started getting ready to form a family. It's like a whole new chapter in my life and our life. So that's the little head. And then this is the I was so happy to know that we were pregnant, but I did get a little nervous because DACA, again, is a temporary thing, and it could be stripped away from me anytime, and ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, knows where I live, where I work. They pretty much know every detail of my life, so they could come and say, you know what, we're sending you back to Mexico. There is that worry.
This is Derek Bapineau. Last night, my wife and I completed my campaign information online, which was really easy. So as of today, I am an official candidate for school board for the city of Laverne and San Dimas for Benita Unified.
When Donald Trump won, at some level, I think a lot of people, myself included, were like, oh, well, anyone can run. Why not me? And, you know, as a teacher, I just thought being a school board member was a natural fit.
So, yeah, I'm excited. Never done something like this before. I guess now it's more campaigning.
Right after August 12th, I felt like my mind was just, like, fraying. I pulled back from looking at a lot of national news because I was so overwhelmed. I left the country. I mean, that was one way I dealt with that. Okay, so on December 25th, 2017, I actually got married. I had my wedding in Bangladesh. My husband's name is Sohail, and he's from Bangladesh. We actually were put in touch by family friends almost 7 years ago when he came to the U.S. to do his PhD. How does it work for us? I really think it comes down to values. Like, we talked about it in the beginning. I sent him a long email with, like, these are my values, and if you can't meet me here, then there's no point in us talking anymore. You cannot be sexist, you cannot be homophobic, you cannot be transphobic. That's not acceptable. I have friends, like very dear friends, who are queer, and if you cannot accept them, then I can't accept you into my life. I need you to be on the same page with me. And he reacted very beautifully to it. We all have different upbringings, we all have different experiences, we see the world differently, right? So I don't think it has to be identical, but it has to be, for a relationship to work, people have to have compatible values.
Let's see, and we are recording. All right, so, yeah, how is life? Life is good. It's 2018. We're coming up on a year of being married. I'm historically conservative. She is very progressive, and it looks like we are successfully navigating our first year of marriage. We haven't really talked about anything political lately, I don't think, or at least not to the point where, like, it caused any kind of rub between us. I guess one thing, you know, just thinking about the gun debate, that keeps popping up.
Of the 17 victims shot and killed by a lone gunman with an assault rifle last Wednesday at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School.
With the Parkland, the latest shooting, you know, people see it as a singular issue. They see it as a gun issue, and it's not just a gun issue. It's a societal issue, and it is absolutely a mental health issue. You know, talking about a gun ban of any kind, it's only going to punish the people that obey the law. My wife will say something to the effect of, yeah, you know, these gun owners think they're John Wayne and they think they're going to like pull out their gun and save the day anytime that something bad happens. And like, that's not the reality. We don't totally avoid things. We kind of just been focused on each other, like ourselves. Yeah. I mean, like this morning she didn't feel good. And so she went for a run. I went for a run and I made her breakfast. You know, I made her eggs and I sliced up a banana, gave her some almonds so she would have a little fat in there, and, you know, sliced up some cherry tomatoes and like made her a little gourmet breakfast. And so guess what? Like, she gets home and she sees what I've done and she's happy and she loves me. And that is my life. That's my little corner of earth. You know, like I'm doing all I can to make her happy.
Mama.
Mama.
My son Malik was born March 6, 2018.
Mama.
Mama.
He has big brown eyes. His hair is a little wavy. Patrick is so sad his hair's not curly yet.
Mama te ama. Mama te quiere mucho, mucho con todo su corazón.
Hi, it's Isabel and Malik. It is Saturday, July 28th. 2018, and we're walking down our street. I've been like constantly checking my mailbox because Patrick and I have submitted our immigration paperwork, and about 2 weeks ago,
my ultimate goal in going through an immigration process is for me to get a green card and eventually to become a U.S. citizen.
And the next step is the interview that Patrick and
so we're waiting to get our interview.
With an immigration official.
It's taking about 10, 11 months.
Checking our mail constantly to see if we get our appointment notice. And right now there's still no notice. So, I guess I'll just keep checking the mail every day. Alrighty. Well, we'll see you later. Diles adios. Diles adios, Malik. He loves being outdoors. He loves looking at the trees, the cars.
Tonight, chaos erupting on the border. Hundreds of migrants rushing to cross into the U.S. from Mexico.
Yeah, I see my people and the current individuals at the border right now. The Trump administration just tear gassed families and children at the U.S.-Mexico border. These are individuals who are legally asking for asylum. That's just awful. As I see these images of mothers with babies in their hands, most likely, I know I would do anything to provide a better future for Malik. And that's what my parents did for us. And so, yeah. For many people, it's a matter of life or death. Why would you ignore that? Who can ignore that?
The storm over separating migrant children from their parents at the U.S.-Mexico border rages on tonight.
Is there an issue you want to talk about?
Whichever one you want. It doesn't matter to me.
One of the issues that bothers me the most about Trump Republicans is immigration.
And I will say that is a tough one.
I believe the thing to do is mentioned in Leviticus 19 and Deuteronomy, where the people who have lived here, who are invited here by our broken immigration system, we should treat them as citizens,
right,
and we should not want to deport them.
I don't want to see families broken up and children being separated from their family. I would like to see sort of like what happened with my family, an opportunity given to individuals as long as those individuals are law-abiding citizens.
My family comes from Mexico. You know, my parents came, yes, they did. They came illegally, but they came here to work. They came here to make a better life for themselves. They were law-abiding citizens. They integrated into the culture. The nation at that particular time back in the 70s, they didn't have to worry about, I don't want to call them Muslims, but the extreme terrorists or extremists or terrorists. Terrorists are coming in through Mexico. This particular president, all he just wants to do is take care of his own. He's just taking care of his house. But yet people have a problem with that.
If I'm going to invite you into my house, you better be respectful of it. Otherwise, I think it's time for you to go.
First, just to have a point of clarification, they're actually law-abiding, wonderful people who are getting arrested. And I have students, and their dads are getting deported.
Wow.
And that's causing huge problems. So it's not just the families that are being broken up, but it's also all these families living in fear. The angel I know is very loving, and I think his opinion is this way because of the conservative echo chamber that guides the church. I think he's wrong, but it doesn't bother me on a personal level.
Derek, always a pleasure. You know, we keep in touch. We appreciate you
all
guys.
Man, well, we love you. Just wanted to check in
all
with
right.
you.
Thank you very much.
All right, brother.
Take it easy.
All right.
It's hard because my family, as I said earlier, we came like that, you know, and it pains me to know of families that are being torn apart. It's very easy for someone to say, ah, who cares, you know, get these illegals out of here. But, I mean, I wouldn't be here had my parents not come here. To know that there are families out there that are going to be broken, that's very harsh. Whether I voted for Trump or not, you know, that's beyond politics in that sense. It's more like, Lord, have mercy on us, you know. So, yeah, it's painful.
Democrats talking about the so-called blue wave. A spate of Democratic wins in special elections so far this year have raised Democratic hopes for even bigger victories this November. Now, that's not a new conversation.
When the polls close, this is what I'm going to post on Facebook. I would like to say thank you to everyone who's helped me with this campaign. I truly appreciate, maybe I should add, the polls are finally closed. Election Day 2018. The polls have finally closed, and we will soon know the outcome of our election for school board. So I talked with my wife about it. We prayed about it. We developed a plan. We recruited people. We did all the stuff that you do. It was a competitive race full of candidates forums, canvassing, paperwork, phone banking, video production, sign placement, and
there was three candidates, and all three candidates were trying to win. I am spending a lot of money. This could be a trip to Europe for my wife and kids.
I like it, except for the. For me, this campaign was not personal. I would say I really wish.
Yeah. I've never ran for anything. I didn't run for school president. I didn't run for ASB. I want to make my community better, and to do that, you got to roll up your sleeves and get to work. I had the TV on because I wanted to see what was happening nationally. And I also turned on my computer. I think it's lavote.net or whatever it is. And I went to that website. You know, you check back periodically, watch the news, go back to see how your election's going. Okay. I am second place right now. It's very close.
You are first place.
Am I first place?
Yes, you have.
No. Oh, yes, I'm first place.
Yes, you're first place.
I can't read.
Now.
20% of all the votes were in, and I was in the lead. That was the first results, and I was like, oh my gosh.
So it's a close race.
And I heard that it was, you know, a couple hours, they're going to have another kind of update
It's 11:23. Nothing has changed. I'm actually thinking I should probably brush my teeth and go to bed soon. The website's not being updated.
So that night I got about 3 hours of sleep. It was 3 a.m. I woke up and I was up. I was not going back to bed. I'd been running on adrenaline and coffee for a very long time, so sleep was something that wasn't happening that often. I also had littered my whole neighborhood full of signs. So I was like, well, I'm up. I might as well take down signs. So I started driving around. I'm picking up signs. And I remember I was on Bonita in the city of Laverne, and I get a phone call. And it was my wife, and she's like, you won! And she was super excited. And I was like, oh, wow, I actually did win.
Taking control of the House for the first time in 8 years.
The midterms, you're not feeling great about how that went?
No. I just think, hey, I give up. I'm just going to sit back and let whatever happens, happen.
Have you noticed that a record number of women are actually now have been elected to Congress?
Yes, which might be a good thing. You know, when you stop and think about it, men have been the majority of all these positions for years and years, and maybe a woman could handle it better. No, I don't believe that. I really don't believe that. Let the men take care of their jobs and let the women take care of their job. Next 2 years, a bad 2 years. There's going to be a lot of mudslinging. Worst fear would be if they impeach him.
So you still support Donald?
Well, I voted for him. You know, and he did do some of the things he said he's going to do. And I don't know if I told you. I don't know if he really did it. My annuity and my 401k are doing wonderful.
Do you think you're going to vote for him again?
You think he's going to run again? You know what? If they put him through what I think they're going to put him through these next 2 years, I would say goodbye. And, you know, who knows? Maybe they'll stop working together and say, okay, we won and you won. You know, the Democrats won and the Republicans won. Now let's become just one and work for the people. But, hey, I'm dreaming.
According to a recent CBS News poll, there's a thing that Democrats and Republicans do see eye to eye on.
Yeah, 50% agree that in the next 2 years, Americans will be more divided than they are now. 34%.
I think social media has really amped up our political process and made us even more tribal than we used to be. I now have friends who are both on the left and the right. I don't comment on a lot of stuff because I have a political position, but there is vitriol.
Donald Trump made a statement earlier today in which he said, I just want to tell you that in these times, we have to unify. We have to come together.
And the way that people react to other people's political opinions is really absurd. I chose the name Adam for this project, and that's not actually my name. I wanted to use a pseudonym because I don't want to bring harm to my wife or myself. In today's society, I can't count that out.
The country is as divided as it has been in 150 years since the Civil War. Right and left live in entirely different cultures in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I think we are polarized. There are people that just don't really want to sit and talk or want to meet in the middle, or at least, you know what, forget about meeting in the middle. Just let's dialogue. Let's just talk.
It's important to talk to each other. It's important to understand one another. But I can't do that if you're denying me my humanity. Like, I can't do that if you automatically start with the assumption that I don't belong here or that I don't have anything to contribute.
I really feel like stories can change people's minds and hearts, or maybe not even change, but make them more receptive. Maybe somebody will not see me of, oh, that illegal. Maybe after they hear my story, they be like, oh, she's documented, which is, you know, it's different. Like, you're humanizing me.
No, this is not a shootout here in Texas. These are just New Year's fireworks.
This is Angel.
You have been listening to 2 years, Diaries of a Divided Nation. The stories in this program were reported by Lenore Bajard-Dukes, John Facile, Delaney Hall, and Elizabeth Nakano.
It is January 1st, 2019.
The lead producer of this program was John Facile. Co-producer, Elizabeth Nakano. Project coordinator, Max Green.
It's going to be a great year, 2019. I'm telling you now.
The program was edited by Sonia Geis, with additional editing by Delaney Hall. Our mix and mastering engineer was Phoebe Wang. Music by Erwin Helfer.
2019 is a year of new beginnings.
The executive producer of this program was Jesse Dukes. Thanks to The Bridge PAI. To learn more about this project, check out TrumpDiariesPodcast.com.
I'm so thankful, America, and... Wow, we've gone through so much, and yet here we are. So don't give up. Keep at it. God bless you.